This is F1 Debrief Episode 77, the National Anthem of Formula One. Coming up this week, we discuss all that rain, all those tyre strategies, and the amazing winner.
So here we are again.
Yep.
Slightly less controversial race than 7 days ago.
Thank God.
Yeah. We are dry, though. Are you dry?
I'll tell you what, I am very, very dry.
I mean, it was very wet in Monza.
It rained all weekend, and yet we're dry.
Yeah.
Some people aren't quite so lucky, though, are they?
What, like Five Live?
Mm.
Yeah, Five Live were at the track on Friday.
Yeah.
They had a slightly unfortunate commentary box, which appeared to be right on the roof, where the roof was leaking.
Did it have a roof?
It may not have had a roof. Here's a quick sample of what Five Live went through on Friday.
Five Live Sports Extra. This is David Croft and Mark Hughes here at Monza, and I'm not sure how long we're going to be able to keep going in our commentary box here because the water is now absolutely pouring through.
Yeah, it's pouring through into the electricity boxes as well.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maurice Hamilton and Ian Phillips will be on at 12:30 this afternoon, hopefully in a drier commentary box than we're getting at the moment, but it's getting very damp here. Morning all.
Bless. You know, people quite often say, oh, it'd be really good if you got to go to races and cover it. And
oh, no.
I think I'd rather stay here.
Yeah, we should report that they are still alive.
Yes.
And the water running on the electric box didn't turn into
no electrocution.
No.
As
so
yet.
They're all good and we're all good. But I'm staying here.
Yes. Good week, bad week. It's been a good week for the sport because the appeal date for Hamilton's penalty last week has been set as the 22nd of September, which is actually much earlier than we were expecting.
Yeah, this is a good thing because this could have been dragged out for a very long time. Presumably not until after the end of the championship, but you never know with the FIA. They could have picked an arbitrary date that was a long way in the future and made up all sorts of excuses to drag it out and drag it out. They've done it as quickly as they possibly could. And we can get the result and we can just move on.
Hopefully it won't overshadow the Singapore race though, because it's the week before.
Yes.
And hopefully we can get it out of our system, whichever way the result goes, before the next race.
Absolutely. Clear it out and get on with it.
It's been a bad week for German Grand Prix because the ADAC are in charge of the Nürburgring and will be meeting with the FIA to discuss that. And now Hockenheim have said that after making a 5.3 million euro loss this year, they're not going to carry on unless they can sort out a better deal financially.
Now, this news came out earlier in the week.
Yep.
Before the rising German star nailed pole position and then a race win.
Yes.
The new Michael Schumacher potentially is in town. Maybe a ratings winner in Germany, and maybe just what Hockenheim is looking for.
Maybe they'll be allowed to Grand Prix again.
I hope not.
Oh.
I think it's a good thing that the ADAC have fallen out with the FIA because we won't have to go there again.
It's been a good week for Force India. Last week we mentioned the fact that Mike Gascoigne and Colin Collis don't necessarily see eye to eye, and it's causing some problems within the team. This week, Vijay Mallya has admitted that the pair don't get on, but says the team is definitely under control. His control.
I like that. Firstly, I like that he's coming out. I mean, there's not a huge amount of press about the fact that he's arguing. Some journalists have rumoured it.
Yeah, it was just a little bit of a kerfuffle.
Yeah, but no, he's come out straight away. He said, right, there is this argument going on. These two people do disagree, and I am the boss.
Yep. I say goes.
Absolutely. This is a good thing for Force India. I like it.
It's been a bad week for Honda staff as a management reshuffle brought about by Ross Brawn has meant that their director of strategy and business planning has left. His name was Ottmar Savnauer.
Right.
Something.
Savnauer.
Yes.
I'm sure, well, we always get pronunciation wrong. I'm sure someone in the live comments will gladly tell us exactly how it's pronounced. It's a bad week, then, if you're Honda staff, because it looks like the cuts are coming. They've been expected. There is a reshuffle, and I'm sure there will be many more.
Yeah, but the thing is, Director of Strategy and Business Planning, it's like one of those weird jobs where, what do you actually do?
Yes. Normally make charts.
And didn't Ross say he was going to absorb some of the guy's jobs anyway, so it can't have been that.
I don't believe that so much as possibly that he's just getting them out the door so we can get some new people in, which is what Honda need.
News and views. Max Mosley is back, and he's gone straight into another controversy.
What's he done this time?
Well, the first thing he said was that the FIA are completely neutral.
This is following on from last week's slightly peculiar decision.
Yes.
On the behalf of the stewards and the FIA.
The penalty.
Mm.
But the quote was, "The only thing I can say is that any suggestion there is a bias for or against any team or driver is completely untrue. I think it's a reflection, and I'm sorry to say this, of the stupidity of the people who say it."
Thanks.
Ouch.
Thanks very much. Well, to be honest with you, I'm not really that offended if Max calls me stupid. I take that as
coming
a bit of
from
a
Max.
Yeah, I kind of take that as a bit of a compliment, wouldn't you? You people, you're stupid who disagree with us. Well, fair enough.
Also, he's saying that there is pressure for him to carry on as president past 2009, and he's not ruling it out, even though he said he would give up.
Right. Now, well, I can imagine you're upset by that.
I'm upset by that.
You pin a lot of hopes on Max leaving. I don't think he's going to leave even after he dies.
Oh, really?
I think they're just going to stuff him and leave him in that office, and someone else will make the calls, but it will just be a stuffed Max sat at his desk.
Ed Gorman wrote a blog post about Mosley's return to the paddock, and it's quite interesting because it's more about how he carries himself now and how he seems to have no shame. It says that he's almost like a new man because he's not carrying that secret around anymore.
Right. So
almost as if he's released the secret and he's much happier. And great. The last paragraph in the blog post says, Mosley is supposed to be standing down next year, but don't bet on it. They love him so much in the FIA, they cannot help themselves and have been writing to him in droves, pleading with him to stay, or so he says.
Right.
As he pointed out, it would be very wrong to deny people their wishes. So this king of the castle will carry on, and you and I and everyone else are stuck with him.
Yes. The one question I do have to ask is, who are all these people writing? And don't they have email? I mean, who puts pen to paper and sends somebody a letter today? That's quite peculiar.
It's all about politics this week, as the FOTA have finally sorted themselves out and what they're doing and what they're for.
Okay, and what have they decided
now? Well, the official statement says, FOTA is committed to the development of Formula One and will work together with FIA and the commercial rights holder to enhance the spectacle of the sport whilst reducing cost and increasing revenue. Nothing new there then.
No, okay.
But what we
lofty
have...
Lofty goals.
Yeah, what we have learned is that there are three separate commissions, the Sporting Working Group, Technical Working Group and Commercial Working Group. Luca di Montezemolo is chairman of the whole thing.
Yep.
John Howitt from Toyota is vice chairman. Martin Whitmarsh does the sporting bit, Ross Brawn the technical bit, and Flavio does the commercial bit.
That is a heck of a lineup.
Sounds good to me.
You've got to be pleased if you've got a team like that. I imagine the headed notepaper going to look very fancy, and I'm sure the business cards are going to have nice titles on it.
Expensive business cards.
Is it going to go anywhere, though? What are they going to achieve? They put this together because Max has said you've got to design your own rules.
Yes.
We assume that he's trying to get all these teams together in order that they may presumably take out Bernie with a huge conglomeration.
Right.
Although they say they are talking to Bernie, and Bernie has been a big player in setting this up, but he's not on that board anywhere, which is interesting.
Well, he's not a team.
No, but is it going to be a lot of hot air? Or
well,
is it going to go
I'll somewhere? Be honest, I didn't think they were going to get as organised as this. So they've already surpassed my expectations.
Yes.
Whether they actually come up with anything is a whole other subject.
And you know that the Luca di Montezemolo is in the job for 1 year. Is that the same for all of the other team members? Eventually they're going to run out of technical people, aren't they?
Yeah.
That could be a problem. There's not that many leading lights.
Maybe
in the
you can
department.
Be re-voted in.
Okay.
Maybe it's not like you can only have a certain amount of terms or anything.
Right.
Maybe you could just keep re-voting the same person as long as it's put to the vote.
I see.
That doesn't matter, does it?
I think that Luca can only be in there for 1 year, but we'll see how that goes. I don't even know if it's going to last a year. It's a brilliant idea if they can make it last. It does sound like an awful lot of hot air, though. Qualifying. Hey, it's race weekend time then. Anything exciting happened? Qualifying, free practice?
Well, it was very, very wet. Free practice was actually interesting because it was monsoon season, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, the drains struggled to cope with the weather on Friday.
As we heard with the Five Live
that wasn't
clip,
good. Yeah.
It was raining
it
properly.
And it was dark.
Yeah, it was really dark.
I don't remember seeing a Formula One race that dark.
It was almost like a precursor to Singapore, really.
Yes.
It was seriously dark.
It was good practice. It was quite scary, and I really liked the pit walls when they were all lit up and
yes.
glowing. They look beautiful, so I'm expecting Singapore to look lovely. If it's anything like that. Didn't see a lot of racing on Friday.
No.
Couldn't draw any conclusions from that. And Saturday morning wasn't an awful lot better.
We didn't see much happen until qualifying when they had to go out.
Yes.
When you had to, otherwise it was...
Qualifying was great, wasn't it?
It
Formula
was.
One needed a qualifying session like that, like never before. And Mother Nature gave us the weather we needed. And what an exciting qualifying session.
I tell you what though, the first session was suspiciously normal. I mean, not necessarily what happened in it, but the people that dropped out, it was like a Honda and Nakajima.
Right, yes. It was, yeah, there was no huge name out in the first session.
No, well, I
was
thought there might there. Be.
Yes. There was in the second session, though. Big names.
Well, Hamilton, he obviously had the wrong tyre choice thing at the very beginning of the session.
Yeah, what happened there?
Well, they sent him out on, was it intermediates? Or...
Yeah, they took a gamble on intermediates.
Yeah.
But Kovalainen didn't.
No.
And the team presumably shares the same weather data. So that was a bad call.
Yeah. But then Hamilton, when they called him back in to change the tyres, he was called to the weighbridge.
Right.
So he...
Super delayed.
In his quotes, he said that he missed the time, the window when the track was at its best. So he really did.
Yes. Can you explain, though, why a team that is fighting for the World Championship, that is leading the Drivers' World Championship, and only has a requirement to get 10 or better, why they decided to go out and presumably better everybody? Why did they feel the need to come first when fifth would have been fine?
They always want to win.
But why?
I don't know.
I understand the racing spirit, and I'm with them on this. And they're like, yeah, okay, every time we go out, we want to do the absolute best. It's almost like they wanted to crush the competition in Q2 to frighten maybe Ferrari to make a mistake in Q1. But it's just such a huge gamble at this late stage in the game. There's only, what, five races to go at that point in qualifying. And they're leading the championship by a slender margin. It just seems really risky.
It wouldn't have been that difficult either, because Massa only just scraped into 10th, didn't he? I mean, he posted the 10th fastest time.
Yes, it was very close.
And he only just stayed there, so...
He did. Bassano in the comments said it's just cockiness. It might well be that.
Could be.
It may be nothing more than they just thought, we know exactly what we're doing. We emphatically trust our weather data. I'm surprised that Covey didn't make the same decision.
Well, like you said, if they trust their weather data that much, why were they both doing different things?
Yes. Yeah, that's very true. No excuse, though, for Kimi, who did make the right tire choice, didn't get a lap in.
What's that about?
Outclassed by Massa, qualifying in the wet.
But we have no reason why he was like that. He wasn't particularly heavy.
I think there was one lap when the track was at its best, when the top 10 runners put their times in, and I think he might have messed up one of the corners on that lap, and he just never had another chance to do it.
No.
And he just went round and round and round hoping for the weather to change, and it never did, and that's where he sat. Very disappointing.
Finally, a Force India got through.
Oh,
yay!
Wow,
it's about time.
How long have we waited for that to happen?
14 races.
Very early on in the season, I think it might have been 14 races. I can't remember whether it was Australia or Malaysia when Vijay said, our goal is to get into Q2. I think it might have been Malaysia, because I think they were inspired by how close they were in Australia. And then in Malaysia, they said they were going to do it in Bahrain, or we're going to do it. And then the next race, we're definitely going to do it this race, and on throughout the season. And finally, they got into Q2 with a little bit of help from the weather. But not that much. Fisichella did a really good job there.
Fisichella over Sutil as well.
Absolutely.
Who would have thought?
The man who did an amazing job at Monaco in the wet. Got himself up to fourth before being punted off. And you'd have put your money, if it was going to be one of them in that weather, in those conditions, you'd have put your money on Sutil. And it was Fisichella who got it done.
Yeah. And how good must he have felt being ahead of a McLaren and a Ferrari?
Yes, that was incredible. Very, very pleasing. What a great start. It's been a long time since he's done that. Probably the last time he did that was in a Renault. And so I'm sure he looked in his mirrors and he was very pleased.
It's also worth mentioning Webber, I think. He did pretty well right at the end.
Yes.
Because he got through to Q3.
Yeah.
And then Bourdais was in third, I think.
He split the Toro Rossos.
Yeah.
Who technically should have a better engine. And he did it when the track really wasn't at his best. And he managed to pull out of time from nowhere. And it was a great, great qualifying lap from him. Not quite front row material, but pretty damn good.
No, because Bourdais was third and he just knocked him down.
He did.
It was good. So Bourdais ended up fourth,
yep.
But Vettel, pole position.
What a pole position.
First ever pole position, youngest ever pole position holder.
He went for it though, didn't he? I mean, before they set out, he said, look at the weather, we've got to go for pole. They fueled him light, they sent him out there, and he just got the job done.
They said afterwards it was a very aggressive strategy, but it worked.
It was an aggressive lap.
Yeah.
Especially because after the qualifying, Berger said, we've put him on a dry setup.
Yes.
Which at the time, when we first said it, I thought, nah.
Not possible.
You couldn't possibly have driven that car at that speed on a dry setup when everybody else was on wet. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. And hats off to him. I mean, that was just a stunning, stunning pole lap. It was coming for a while. They're slowly working up.
Getting better and better.
Yeah, they're slowly working up the field and qualifying. Maybe pole wasn't, you know, front row was maybe on, but pole position, come on.
After that, we were eagerly looking forward to the race, but we'll talk about it after this short break. If you miss any of the weekend's action from Free Practice 1 through to the checkered flag, tune into F1 Digest. Dedicated daily coverage of all the on-track action, including the best bits from live commenting and all the reaction from teams and drivers. Visit sidepodcast.com to listen and subscribe. The race. Although ultimately it didn't turn out that bad, the thing we were dreading happened.
What were we dreading?
A safety car start.
Right. I thought you were going to say Vettel stalling. Which I was kind of privately dreading.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, not Vettel.
Body.
Yeah.
That really didn't need to happen at this race.
Oh, it's just so bad because in the build-up coverage, ITV was showing him from post-spa.
Yes. Oh.
And he was crying.
See, when you read these quotes post-race, they're just quotes. You
it's
don't
just words.
Get the context.
Just words on
that
a screen.
That was heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
He was so upset. I had no idea he was that upset about it. I just thought he was like, oh, seventh, what can you do? I did my best. I couldn't crash. I didn't know the guy was bawling his eyes out at the time.
Bless him.
And then he does... you know, keep up with his super fast teammate. He does get up to fourth position on a heavier fuel load, it turns out.
Yeah.
The guy stopped after Vettel. So Vettel was super light to go for a pole. Bourdais was doing the safe thing on a decent strategy. He was in actually a better position and, you know, second was on, but he could have done something with Vettel with a better strategy. Can't get off the grid.
No.
When's
he going to get a break, really?
Of all the races, when's he going to get another chance like this?
I know.
That was so, so, so gutting. And coupled with the safety car lap, which is just a bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
The guy didn't get a chance to get started and join on the lead lap.
I bet he was really sad after that as well.
Well, we don't know whose fault it was, for starters, because he may have messed it up, which would be really bad. He, you know, in the most inopportune moment, he pulled the wrong lever or something. It's
yeah.
not entirely clear where it went wrong, and no one's really apportioned blame anywhere. It could have just been a software glitch. And he said the anti-stall didn't kick in, which is really unfortunate. And it obviously just wasn't his day.
So before they even started, he was one lap down.
Just
ruined.
Yes, which brings us onto the safety car introduction, because I don't get it. I don't get what it achieved today.
Well, I'm never, ever going to be a fan of starting behind a safety car.
No, because after Fuji,
bad starting
memories.
20 laps. Now, I don't agree with it, but I can sort of understand why. If you have to go behind a safety car, you know, and it takes 20 laps for the track or the weather to
sure.
clear up.
Yep.
I don't agree with it.
Nope.
But if that's the way it's got to be, fine.
It's worth bringing out the safety car.
Yeah.
It stayed out too long in Fuji, but I'm over that. Carry on.
Not bitter at all.
Not at
it's all.
All
fine.
But you bring the safety car out for a reason.
Yeah. So two laps just seems like that's about a formation lap. Why
yes.
couldn't they just do it themselves?
I'm not entirely sure what they learned from doing that. Maybe they made the call that the safety car had to come out early. They made the call early that the safety car had to come out.
Yeah.
And then the conditions dried up more than they expected it to. And the car was sat there unnecessarily and it was too
Maybe.
Late to make the call back. So they just had to go with it. But it did seem excessive and it did seem unnecessary. And I can't see that they were a heck of a lot safer as a result of it. I mean, there wasn't a lot of cars going into turn one close together, but there was a lot of rooster tails going into turn one, which wouldn't have been the case had they started from a standing start.
Unless going from a standing start would have been... dangerous. I don't know if that would have been the case.
I can't imagine how it would have been much more dangerous, to be honest with you, because there would have been less spray. The brakes would have been slightly colder, but not hugely colder. I thought Vettel did a good job of leading the pack. He really did hold them up.
He backed them up a long way, didn't he?
Kovalainen was sort of side by side with Webber, and he backed them up nicely. And for a guy who presumably it was his first time leading a safety car lap, I think it was the first time he's had out of a safety car in Formula One. So with that little experience, he pulled out a large margin before the first corner and he did exactly what he had to do and he was well ahead of Kovalainen.
After the Hamilton penalty last week, the FIA clarified the chicane cutting rule.
I might have heard that rumour.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we don't really want to go into the whole thing, but they basically said once you've cut the chicane, you really have to give the place back and wait a corner or two corners.
You wait a
corner. No one really knows.
No, you do know. We know what the principle is. If you attempt to pass someone in the chicane, you hit the chicane, you don't make the corner. You have to give one place back, then you have to sit there and wait until you get to the next corner, regardless of how far away that next corner might be. It may only be a couple of hundred yards.
Yeah.
Then you have to make the pass again. So it seemed to work reasonably well in the race.
Well, the thing is, I don't know whether it's just because of this track, because there are a lot of chicanes, or if because it was fresh in everyone's mind, but there seemed to be a lot of handing places back.
Yes.
Because we had Hamilton pass Kimi by cutting the chicane,
yep.
which was a bit scary because it was just like happened
yeah,
last time.
Action replay, yep.
And then he gave the position back, and
yep.
Massa got past Rosberg.
Now that
and it seemed to be legitimate, but Ferrari told him to give the place back.
Yeah, well, according to Ted News, he said they were asked by Charlie Whiting to ask Massa to give the place back, which he duly did. Now, we didn't see a great camera angle on that, and I'm sure more videos will appear on YouTube in the coming weeks as people find those camera angles. To me, it looked like a perfectly legitimate pass because he took the line they've been taking all weekend, which
yeah.
is to jump both curbs. Now, if the racing line generally is jumping both curbs, how is that cut in a corner any more than literally just taking to the normal route around the tarmac is jumping the corner? I don't understand it. It seemed marginal, and I also thought that Hamilton's later pass at the same corner was carbon copy.
And he didn't give a place back.
He didn't give the place back, I don't think. And I'm not too sure why they made that call. Maybe there would be an extra safe. Maybe people are just paranoid and it's in their minds.
Yeah.
And
they, because it's just fresh in their minds, isn't it?
It's a Ferrari and people don't want to be, you know, they don't want people accusing them of, you know, any kind of favouritism. So they're extra paranoid about the Ferrari team. I mean, in some ways, it's a bad thing to be in a Ferrari car right now because no one's going to give you, or presumably the FIA aren't going to give you a call in your favour because there's just going to be more outcry. So I wonder if they might come out of this worse off.
It didn't seem to hold Hamilton up, though, because he started flying through the field. They were overtaking manoeuvres everywhere.
Yes.
Absolutely amazing.
The conditions came to him, and his tyres were working well, and his driving style, presumably got more heat in the tyres than Kovalainen, who wasn't making as much progress nearer the front.
Yeah.
We speculated in the commenting that potentially Hamilton may have gone with a dry setup. And as the track began to dry, it sort of became his ideal conditions, and therefore he could make everyone else look a bit silly.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Hamilton is good at overtaking and coming through the field, but there must have been something that made him. He was making the rest of the field look stupid.
Yes, it was. It comes every lap, one car per lap. Here's another chicane. Here goes another overtaking maneuver. It was just perfect. The car was hooked up. He was hooked up. Night and day compared to how he was in qualifying when he couldn't get anything out of the car.
And yet, there was another tyre mistake. Yeah, well, it wasn't really a mistake. They just got the timing wrong.
Oh, on the pit stops, because he went on to the extreme wets and then he had to come back in.
Yeah.
And negated all of that work he'd done due to a bad tyre call. But I think it may have been too early to go on the inters when he came in.
For him, probably, because obviously he uses his tyres more.
He does use his tyres a lot more. And he, in fact, near the end of the race on the inters that he had, and he only ran them for a very short amount of time at the end of the race. He'd already done enough damage in a very short number of laps. So therefore, it just wasn't that was never going to work for him unless it rained. And even if it rained, I should think it was just shot for him. When you burn the tyres up as much as you do, you're going to get that astonishing pace compared to everybody else. But there's no long-term plan when you're driving like that.
There was only one retiree this race. Fisichella. Yes. After all that hard work in qualifying.
That was a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
But before he went out, he was losing ground to almost everybody. And I'm not entirely sure what happened. Firstly, how the hell did he qualify the way he did?
Yeah.
Very good from him. He couldn't keep that pace up in the race. And he was
Which is hardly surprising, to be fair.
Yeah.
They're usually at the back.
Before he went off, he tapped the back of Coulthard. But that was just as Coulthard had passed him. And you know if Coulthard's passing you, you're going pretty slowly.
If you end up near Coulthard...
You're in trouble. I thought Hamilton did well to avoid him at the start because he was near him then. It's a shame for Fisichella, but it looked like he didn't have the pace to keep that position to the end of the race anyway.
You said that Hamilton managed to avoid Coulthard, but he did sort of tangle with Webber instead.
Yes. Now, that's a tricky one. I don't know. On the ITV commentators, Martin Brundle sort of thought it was a bit dodgy. I thought it was a 50-50.
Yeah.
Webber didn't complain afterwards.
He didn't say anything about it, didn't mention it.
Hamilton didn't make any mention of it either.
No.
He said he performed some good overtaking manoeuvres throughout the race. And I'm not too sure that smacking Webber's suspension like that was a good overtaking manoeuvre. And it was a little bit dodgy on Glock earlier. However, good to see overtaking, and we shouldn't knock it. And neither driver went out of the race as a result of it. So therefore, I think we should just say that's fine. It's good. It was good racing. Webber afterwards... could no longer mount a challenge. I don't know whether his tyres got dirty.
Maybe he was broken.
He fell back after that,
yeah.
Whereas before he was looking really racy.
I do tend to disapprove of overtaking manoeuvres when they end up with wheels being banged together. I think PK's done it in the past and I've been like, not good.
Love that manoeuvre.
Yeah.
Someone's always going to lose out and it's usually the guy on the outside.
I guess you're right that, I mean, if no one gets hurt...
No
one goes out of the race or anything.
It's
then.
Risky, and obviously the McLaren suspension can take it, otherwise Lewis wouldn't have done that. And considering how flaky the Red Bull was at the beginning of the season, they've also done a bit of strengthening on the front of that car, because I would have expected it just to collapse into a million pieces.
Yeah.
So hats off to the Red Bull guys there for making a stronger car than they started the year with.
We talked about Raikkonen not being particularly useful in qualifying.
Hopeless. Would be the non-polite way of putting it.
Yeah, that's a better word, probably.
He did get through to Q2, but, you know, beating my Massa.
Yeah.
I just haven't got over that.
Well, he didn't really shine at all in the race either.
No.
To be honest, I don't remember seeing him.
Side by side with Hamilton, and who made
the
most exciting race out of the two of them. But who decided to come alive 10 laps from the end again?
Yes.
Every single time.
It's almost like his body clock is just slightly out from everyone else's.
He's on a bit of a time delay.
Yeah.
His race starts 1 hour.
Satellite delay.
Everybody else's. Yeah. I'll tell you something. When there's a bit of rubber on track, that guy can make more use of that rubber than anybody else.
When everyone else's tyres are going off.
Yeah.
He starts.
Man comes into his own. Another fastest lap from Kimi. The 9th fastest lap of the year. And nothing, but nothing to show for it after this race.
Well, that's not true. The thing he does have to show for it after this race is that he's got his contract extended.
Right.
Well, probably not based on this race, though.
Goodness me, no. Thank goodness it was signed on Friday. Mm. Because I'm sure at the end of it, maybe somebody would be having second thoughts, because that wasn't a stellar outing for the man. If the race would have been another hour longer, I'm sure he'd have won it. But as it happened, it came too little, too late.
10 laps from the end, Barrichello came in for a pit stop, and he put on the tyres with a white stripe.
Right.
Now, we all thought, and ITV told us, that it was the extreme wear tyres, but it seemed a bit odd for him to be on extreme wears because everyone else was on inters and the track was drying up.
And no threat of oncoming rain.
No. And it turns out in his post-race press quotes,
yep,
press release thing, that he tried the dry tyres.
Okay. A risky move, but I guess if it had paid off, it may have paid them dividends because it worked at Silverstone.
Yeah, Ross Brawn was trying to do a Silverstone.
A bit of a strategy call, but he didn't lose out too much because he was already out of the points. He didn't go off, though. Presumably he would have struggled while everyone else was on their worn-out tyres. You'd imagine that he may have struggled to keep it on the track.
He said that it was hard and it was basically taking all his concentration just to keep it on track.
I bet it was fun.
And he just had to get to the end.
I bet that would be a riot on those tyres.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he would have gone backwards and fallen behind car after car, but it would have been a wild ride while he was out there.
Whilst everyone else was having great fun with their tyres, Vettel just led from start to finish.
Yes. Well, he lost it, his lead, during his pit stops, but generally...
Yeah, but that doesn't really count.
The guy never looked under threat, never looked under pressure. There was a point when we thought Hamilton might be catching him.
He was second at one point.
Yep.
How he did that.
But McLaren wisely brought Hamilton in and so that he wouldn't lose too much time trying to catch and pass Vettel.
Yep. And although it wasn't so wise in the end.
No, that's true. I wonder if they compromised their strategy there and brought him in a couple of laps earlier to avoid getting caught up in Vettel's dirty air. And then maybe lost their window for getting onto the inter tyres.
Could be.
Could have happened. We might have to analyse the fuel loads and the pit stops later.
Oh, let's do that.
Geek out on stats.
Yeah, I look forward to that. So Vettel won. So he had his youngest pole position.
Which he took the title off Fernando Alonso.
Yep. And now he's the youngest winner.
Which he took the title off Fernando Alonso.
I think someone said in the comments, apologies, I can't remember who, that the Alonsometer would be low, like the trillometer.
I thought it was really nice.
But different.
When Alonso came, he shook his hand.
That's true. Right. Where did he come from, though?
I have no idea. He parked his car and he got out of his car and he went and found Vettel in that time.
Yeah.
But he was on a mission.
He
wanted to shake his hand. He wanted to publicly show that he wasn't bitter about it. And he'd held that title for a long time. And I think he was secretly grateful that it wasn't Hamilton who'd taken it.
The podium was Vettel, Kovalainen and Kubica, who are all first-time winners this year.
Yes.
So a nice different podium. It was good to look at.
That is, yeah. You did mention that you would have rather the 100th winner of a Grand Prix was Vettel.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I thought was a bit mean.
Well, you know, I did say at the time that I was a bit gutted that Kovalainen
inherited it.
Was the 100th because he just inherited it, whereas Vettel actually worked.
He won it. He got it on merit. He went out there and he raced that damn car hard.
Yeah. But, I mean, in the end, I'm just glad Vettel got a win.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter when it came.
It was a great podium. That was a snapshot of the 2008 season right on that podium right
there.
It just captured everything we've had. It's so many good podiums, so many new winners. It's just been a brilliant season and Vettel's really, really capped it off with today's win.
Also, what was interesting and probably good for ratings and things is that it was an Italian manufacturer,
yep,
Italian engine, at the Italian GP.
Yes. Yeah, that's very good. And the national anthem. German national anthem for Vettel.
German, then Italy. Tell you what, that's the national anthem of Formula One, and I haven't heard that for a while.
A national anthem of Formula One?
Yeah.
There isn't. Oh, because...
That's what I call it.
Because that's all you heard.
That's all I heard.
For 2 years.
Yeah. And that's all I knew. That's how I understood Formula One to be. Germany, then Italy.
Did you feel like you regressed?
It was a bit odd.
Yeah. Somebody said it in the comments. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Jordan. He said, it's the first time I've been happy to hear those two anthems together on the podium. Normally he's cursing himself. Arr! But no, very good. You can't say enough about Vettel, can you? That's such a nice thing to happen to that guy. Perfect weekend all round. And
I think everyone is saying that he just brings a nice breath of fresh air to the whole thing.
He does.
It's just what Formula One needed after last week.
Oh, isn't it?
And, you know, he's a nice guy and he just deserved it.
Absolutely.
Every step of the way. I'll tell you something else, though. Toro Rosso have now actually jumped Red Bull in the championship, which is just embarrassing.
I was trying to work out, and I think I put it on the comments earlier in the live thread, would that upset Dietrich Mateschitz if either of his teams beat the other team? I mean, does he want Red Bull to be in front of Toro Rosso? Because he gets the money. The money's the same at the end of it.
Yes, but isn't he selling Toro Rosso?
Well, he was, but then the customer car debate has been opened up by FOTA, which mentioned right at the beginning of the show.
Yep.
With the FOTA discussions ongoing, their customer car situation may well be resolved, and there may be an opportunity for customer cars to come back, in which case the guy may keep both his teams.
Journey has just pointed out in the comments that Toro Rosso have won before Red Bull. So it's not just that they're ahead in the championship or anything, they actually got the win before Red Bull.
That's a blooming good point. They did. And pole before Red Bull as well, presumably, because we haven't seen a Red Bull on pole either.
No, Webber's had a couple of seconds.
Yeah. Wow. That is astonishing. There's going to be a lot of talks about engines, actually, because that newest chassis is clearly a really good chassis. He's done the design work that he was tasked to do. He's gone out there. He's made another peach of a car. That's a great new car to take on Ferrari with their own engine.
Yeah.
Imagine taking Ferrari's engine and then building a better car than Ferrari.
Yeah.
That is absolutely freaking astonishing.
That's weird.
You've got to tip your hat to Adrian Newey for that one. However, it was Adrian Newey that got, I believe, that got the Ferrari bumped into the Toro Rosso team.
Oh, really?
I think the argument was, originally, nobody ever wins a race with a customer Ferrari engine.
I see. And hence, so he chose Renault's.
Not the smartest decision.
He brought on the Renault.
I believe Newey campaigned very hard for the Renault engine change. And he wanted to work with that engine and he wanted it in his car and he felt he could design a better package around it.
He must be kicking himself.
I'll tell you, the weirdest thing is he's designed the package around the Renault and then they've bolted the Ferrari into it. So it's like a second rate installation.
That's true.
And it's not all Vettel, because Bourdais got up there too. It's not just, I mean, Vettel did a really, really good job. But it must be a decent car. There's a decent motor there to get both of their drivers within the top four and one of them winning the race. It's an astonishing achievement and you can't say enough good things about him. Hello, caller.
Hello.
That sounds like Junior to me. I recognise that voice. Thank you for calling in this evening. What are your thoughts having witnessed the Monza race today?
Well, really happy for Vettel, first of all. Really happy that the boys at Minardi finally made it. They haven't looked this good in more than a decade, actually. I think 1990 was the last time they looked this good. Shame for Bourdais. I think he would have done pretty well. Probably would have been a double podium for Toro Rosso. But as it is, I'm sure Gerhard Berger is very happy. This should help him sell Toro Rosso. Well, at least Red Bull's taken Toro Rosso to the right people. Behind him, I was pretty disappointed with Kovalainen. Vettel caught him asleep at the restart and then basically left him for dead afterwards. Kovalainen didn't really look like himself today. Didn't really catch a smile from him anywhere in the podium or in the press conference. It's just like he just wanted to get away from Monza as quick as possible. I don't know. Also, a good drive from Hamilton, although he made the wrong call in the strategy. Although I have been talking to some people today, they weren't really too impressed with some of Hamilton's passes, especially that one on Webber towards the end. It seems that the tide is really turning on Lewis, especially outside Britain. At least that's my observation. I don't know if that will carry through.
Do you think, Junior, that Sebastian Bourdais has done enough to secure his future for another year after the last two races? Obviously, he didn't get going today, but he put in the second fastest lap of the race. Do you think Gerhard Berger has piqued enough interest, and do you think he'll land a seat for one more season?
It's going to boil down to either Sebastian Bourdais or Bruno Senna. Given on form, I would think that, yeah, Bourdais would probably get a second go. Unless, you know, a new buyer comes along and has certain terms that Berger has to agree with, like a certain type of criteria for a second driver. But I think Bourdais may have done just about enough to hang on to his seat.
Junior, you're a legend. Thank you for calling. We do very much appreciate it. Really good insights there. We're gonna move on, but if you're around in the future, it'd be really good to speak to you again.
Yeah,
would be great.
We have another caller on the line, and this time we have Mr. Scott Woodwiss. Scott, what's your thoughts on today's action?
Well, first of all, I'm so, so happy for Vettel. I think he drove a textbook race. He was flawless all the way. And literally, I was so happy for him that when I saw him on the podium, my eyes were watering because I was so happy for him. I was that happy. Because I think that, you know, Vettel winning, it's a really big breath of fresh air for Formula One. I think F1 needs more characters like Vettel and Bourdais because they're more down to earth. They're not just all these monotone, like, and, you know, robot types like Kimi or Lewis just being told what to say. You know, these guys are proper drivers and they're out there and they're down to earth and they're happy for an interview and they're happy to, you know, speak with the fans and just be with them. And I think that's what Formula One needs. So, yeah, he did a fantastic job today.
Would you not say, though, in certain circumstances, that the Toro Rosso drivers are a little bit more out of the spotlight than, say, Lewis and Kimi, in terms of the questions they get asked and the pressure they're under and the people who are cross-examining every single thing they do? Do you think Vettel will be able to keep up the current persona he has, or do you think it's going to get withered away and he'll eventually turn into a Michael Schumacher-type character?
If he just keeps up his positive attitude, then I'm sure that he can set an example to the rest of the paddock. In terms of whether he's going to change, like I said, as long as he just stays positive and just gets on with the job in hand, then I don't see any reason why he can't be a very popular figure in the pit lane.
Cool. Okay. And of the rest of the racing down the field, I mean, Hamilton did a whole bunch of overtaking manoeuvres today. Anyone else impress you? And anyone else you were keeping an eye on?
I think really I could say just Hamilton was really impressive. Kovalainen really didn't particularly shine. I'd say, for us, I was impressed with Alonso's tactics. I think he did pretty well. He was long on the fuel, which I thought was quite impressive. It seems to me that those Renaults, you know, they can hold their fuel for a long time. So
they can. They're very efficient, yep.
Yeah, and the pace of Alonso was pretty decent. Also, Kubica doing well to come up from 11th on the grid to 3rd. I thought was a good performance.
Christine pointed something out, I think it was on F1 Digest, that Kubica said after the race he overtook... he overtook his teammate and he didn't even realise that he'd passed him, so bad was the water in the spray, that he went clean past the car. He didn't hear it and he didn't see it. That must be quite frightening.
Well, I was imagining it would have been quite funny if he actually hit him. He'd be like, what the hell was that? And then to find out he was doing that, he probably would have never been able to live it down.
Thank you very much for calling in, Scott. Always appreciate it. Always good to hear from you.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll be able to catch up with you very, very soon.
Yeah, no problem.
And on the line now, we have another caller, and on the line now is Alex, I believe. Hello, Alex.
Hello.
Hello, sir. How's it going?
It's going very well, thank you.
And have you had a good day today? You enjoyed the racing?
Oh, it's been fantastic. Yeah, it's been really great.
Favourite parts of today's race?
Well, Vettel winning, that was awesome. Really, really great. And I've just been really looking forward to this since he started in Formula One. I've been thinking, when is it going to happen? And this was incredibly early. I did not expect it at all. And a great, great performance from him. So I'm really, really pleased.
And what do you make of the fact that you have this Ferrari customer team outclassing, completely outdriving the main Ferrari drivers?
Well, I think it's really amazing. The thing that's, I think people haven't really been talking about, maybe I haven't seen it, but the thing that's been really amazing to me is how poor Kovalainen was today. I mean, Lewis was driving great guns from where he was back in the field, but even so, I have to say that Massa, Lewis and Kimi and Kovalainen really didn't do very well at all, considering they were in such better machines. Maybe those machines suddenly didn't work today, but actually the Toro Rosso car shouldn't be that much better than them.
No, and I mean, it wasn't just today either, because Bourdais was running fourth for almost the entire of the Spa race by the last two laps. So they've been building up to it. It's not just a one-off. And the cars, you know, the big teams, have they stopped development? Are they just concentrating so much on each other and matching each other's strategy and pace so much they're just not looking behind anymore?
I have a question.
Okay.
If Toro Rosso get their chassis from Red Bull, does that mean that they don't have to worry about development for 2009 and they might be able to bolt on some stuff?
Yes. But what are they doing? They must be doing something now because they're getting quicker and quicker.
Yeah, but if everyone else is concentrating on 2009 as well,
yeah,
then Toro Rosso have a bit of an advantage there.
So is the fight that Red Bull in currently with Renault and Toyota for fourth in the championship, isn't that presumably benefiting Toro Rosso but they don't need to take any of the risks or defend in the same way that, that Red Bull do. And now they're losing ground to them.
That sounds pretty good to me. I mean, it sounds like you just leave Red Bull to go and develop the 2009 car, and you and Toro Rosso is just concentrating on right now. Maybe that's the deal. So maybe no wonder Dietrich Mateschitz looked so happy today, because he's just got a great car for this race and also for next year too.
Junior mentioned in an earlier call that he thought it was surprising how unhappy Kovalainen looked and the fact that he just wanted to leave. What do you reckon's got into the guy?
Once you get out of Saturday, presumably they have a sort of almost like a reset in their mind, like they're dealing with the next day. Kovalainen must have looked at himself second on the grid and said, I could win this because all I've got in front of me is a Toro Rosso. And the next competitor is in, real competitor. Mine is in ninth or 10th or whatever Massa was in, and so this is a great opportunity for me to win a race. And so for him, this was him losing at an open goal.
Thank you for that, Alex. We'll leave it at that point, and thank you very much for calling in.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
We have to pick our fantasy races choices by 5 p.m. UK time on a Friday.
And I got mine in this week.
You did. You managed to do it. Did you get rid of Alonso?
I got rid of Alonso.
Ha-ha.
No more.
Did he finish fourth? Anyway.
Shucks.
So I don't know if people managed to predict that Vettel was going to do really well, but the top five has changed. In fifth place is Canik F1 with 6507. Fourth is Fledglings with 6511. Third is Scuderia Bigotes with 6520. Second, Jordan F1 with 6521. And in first place, NG Racing with 6659. I actually haven't had time to prepare the normal spreadsheet I do with the highest climbers and the most points and stuff.
You don't have any stats.
So I don't have any stats. But what I can tell you is that you have gone up and overtaken Lou.
I had a really good point scoring week. It's my second best point scoring week of the season.
Excellent.
Come on, me.
You're now in 80th.
Yeah. Well, that's a bit of a downer.
It's better than where you have been previously, though. So right. I had a really poor week this week.
Yeah,
and
but
I
look
went
at your
down.
Team. We warned you. We said your team is not.
Yes, but you warned me last week, and actually I did really well then.
Right.
So I'm not listening to anything you say.
Okay.
I went down, and I'm now in 126th, so that's rubbish.
Oh, dear. Okay, but I did beat Lou, so I'm quite pleased with that, because we're having our own little mini competition there. She thinks she's going to get a little better of me before the end of the season, and I think it's going to be really close. But I'm ahead at the moment. That's ahead at the moment.
Because I have no stats, we're just going to pick some random teams to mention.
Yeah.
In 30th in our league is Evolution, which is Wayne's team, and he got 329 points, which puts him on exactly 6,000. How cool is that?
That's a nice figure.
He had Massa, Hamilton and Kubica this week.
That's a small team, but it looks like it paid him dividends.
Well, Kubica definitely worked well, I think.
Yep.
In 151st is Oz Rocket, which is Rod's team, and he had 364 points this week. But he started late.
Right.
That's why he's so far down.
Yep.
He had Alonso, Trulli, Weber, Nakajima and Bourdais. Possibly not the best team, but Alonso got a lot of
might
points.
Might have saved from there, yep.
And finally, in 74th in our league is KHR Racing, which is Tyre's team, and they had 502 points, which is pretty good. Raikkonen, Rosberg, Kubica and Vettel.
Sadly,
well
we
done
didn't...
to get Vettel.
Well, yes.
Yes.
I mean, that was a really good, that was a blinding choice, because obviously, do you get points for pole? I think you get points for pole as well, so that's super good. One thing to mention is we didn't manage to overtake Autosport League.
No, I think maybe we closed the gap slightly.
Yes.
But we're
still
not there yet.
Still ahead of us now. Mm-hmm. They're not pulling away, but when they're still in our sights, seems like it's going to be a tough job to overhaul them. Feedback.
Hi, Side Podcast. This is Nigel McGregor. The Formula One race will have just finished within the last half hour or so at Monza. I'm in Silverstone at the moment watching the Le Mans 1,000-kilometre race. And just popped into the Paddock Cafe to get a drink, trying to avoid the result of the Formula One. And I see Vettel in the media briefing area afterwards. So I'm guessing he came somewhere in the top three. So well done him. Not looking good for my fantasy racers team, though. Spitfires at dawn. Trying to get from 15th into the top five. Anyway, hope it's been a good race. I'm going to watch it on tape when I get home tonight. Great show. Keep up the hard work. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Nigel.
Spitfires at Dawn are currently 23rd in the league. So.
Okay, well, he's doing better than 80th.
doing better than all of us, I think. All of us put together, really. I've had a couple of emails this week. The first one from Robert. He said, "Hi, Christine. I thought you were a bit harsh on PK the Younger in your review of the Belgian GP. You questioned him starting on intermediates when everyone else was on the option ties, claiming the team knew he was rubbish in the wet and therefore wouldn't trust him on the dries. Me then said he burnt out the inters early in the race and crashed out as a result."
I did say that. Sadly, I was wrong.
Robert continues, "When I was watching the race, I thought PK had started on the prime tyre, not inters. This was confirmed by Renault's press release after the event. So he actually spun on a heavy fuel load and the harder compound tyre in the damp conditions. Not a sterling performance, but not quite the travesty you described either."
Yes. Completely my bad, and I totally apologise for that mistake. The only, well, there was not really an excuse, but we did sort of rush on air after a manic. A bit of running around after the penalty and plenty of rewrites with F1 Digest, and things were running a bit late. Didn't print out the tyre strategies, didn't know what I was talking about. I took an assumption it was a different tyre, it was the wrong tyre. I do have the tyre strategies for this race, however, everybody had to start on the extreme wet, so I'm clued up, but there's nothing to be really too smart about.
And Robert finishes, "P.S. I came up with a new entry in the You Know You're an F1 Fan When game during live commenting for Spa Quali. You know you're an F1 fan when you electrocute yourself upgrading the battery pack in your Toyota Prius in preparation for KERS next year."
Dangerous business.
And we had another email disagreeing with us. This one was from Sebastian. He said, "Dear Christine, I am horrified in recent and past podcasts to hear you often lament at race results being later amended and suggesting a NASCAR system be employed whereby the results stand whatever.
Okay.
I know you suggested sanctions be imposed to counter any wrongdoing in the form of fines, points docked, or penalties for future races, but surely it would be a travesty for individual races to have undeserved results, even if the delays and uncertainties can be painful. What about Brazil 2003, a red flagged race when there was a confusion as to whether to count back one lap or two for the finish order, with the result that Raikkonen was given the win, but on appeal, FIA gave the victory to Fisichella. Giancarlo's first win, the last win for both Jordan and Cosworth. It would have been terrible if they had been told, 'Tough, we do not change results.' It's all part of the soap opera that is Formula One."
That is a damn good point. Ian Phillips was talking about it on 5 Live on Friday, and he said, he was recounting the tale, and he said that basically the stewards got it wrong because it was an automatic countback, and then they added another countback to it. And Jordan couldn't do anything about it until they got back to the factory 2 days later and proved it when they could get to all the data. And there's no way they could have protested it earlier. It just takes that amount of time. So in that instance, yes, that would be a travesty, and that is the correct word. So I don't know what to do about that. That's a very good point.
You can't just do it on a one-off, can you? If it's going to be that way for something, it's got to be that way.
There's a whole different spin on that, and I don't know the answer.
We're going to have to give that some thought.
Yes, you could have prepped me with that email before. I've never heard that argument before, and that's interesting. If anyone in the live comments has anything to add to that, I'd be really interested, because I don't know what you do there, because we don't want results amended. We don't want the podium to be delayed. You can't delay a podium for 2 days. I really have no idea what you do there.
But then we feel cheated if we have to watch a podium that's fake.
Absolutely. But then you'd feel really cheated if you were Jordan and you rarely win a race and you lose one because of that too.
Too true.
Tough call.
And my last email this week comes from RG. He said, "Hey guys, once again, I felt I should write in again this week to simply congratulate the BMW strategy people for helping the team get from unpromising situations into podiums and plenty of points. First off, in Spa, due to the genius of the strategy guys, Heidfeld came in for inters and stormed through the pack to then pick up third and then to be promoted to second. If they hadn't have made that call, we would have finished, what, seventh? Then in Monza, keeping both drivers until some other drivers were on their second stop, and then thanks to the drying track and picking the perfect time to go on to inters and then being able to pick up a podium that we never would have got and a handy fifth place. I would also like to say well done to Vettel and complain about Lewis Hamilton. Hamilton was very aggressive today, a bit too aggressive. He was very rude in passing Glock and Alonso, and I reckon his ego was a bit too big for him today."
RG, thank you. He's absolutely right about the BMW strategists. They are immense.
Kubica did amazing today, didn't he?
Frighten us to death during many a qualifying session by leaving it to the very, very last moment. But they really know what they're doing. They're really confident. And you wouldn't want to mess with them in a straight up strategy race. And he's right; he's picked them up loads of points. And hats off to all the people at BMW. They are doing a grand job, especially after it looked like they were going to tail off a little bit once they got their win and achieved their goals. But they're keeping up the pace, and Kubica's podium really shows that they've not given up yet.
Housekeeping. We've been meaning to talk about this for ages now, but we found an alternative to Twitter.
Yes. Oh, we haven't gone into this, have
no,
we
haven't.
On the podcast. We've gone into it on Inside Track, and we've gone into it in the blog and the comments. But yes, Twitter drove us nuts. Great concept.
Absolutely.
Microblogging, love it. All your thoughts in less than 140 characters.
It's wonderful.
Perfect. That was until Twitter fell over.
Well, it has issues.
With scalability.
Yeah, with so many. It's so popular.
It got a bit popular and it fell over. Now, an alternative has come along called Identica, which we're a bit in love with, has to be said. It's sort of taken over our lives within the last couple of weeks, almost a month now, isn't it?
It's just like Twitter when Twitter worked.
Yes, it was in the early days of Twitter. When there was only maybe a couple of F1 people on there, didn't really, you know, get... It feels like it's just getting going. The real reason, the main reason we love Identica and the main reason we're encouraging people to follow us and come and join us on Identica is because it supports federated microblogging, and that's important.
Is it?
Well, the way of... It's a bit techy and a bit geeky, but the important thing to understand is it's less likely to fail than Twitter.
Isn't it basically that we get to sort of host some of it ourselves?
Eventually, that's the plan.
So if you sign up to us, you sort of get to be hosted there. So if the main one goes down,
yeah,
it still works. That's basically, isn't it?
The best way I've heard it explained is there are 1 billion people on the internet and 1 billion people cannot use one service. So if everybody used Twitter, it could never, ever scale to every single person on the internet. So what you do is you have the main Identica server and then you have a smaller... Identica silos basically around the internet, so we could have a side podcast chat Identica server, which is the long-term plan, so that if Identica falls over and gets really popular when there's something techie going on and, you know, the whole infrastructure collapse because everybody wants to be on there, our little silo with a smaller amount of Identica people on it, you and I and whoever else feels interested to join us,
yep,
that should stay up because we should be able to make a website scale to a couple of tens of people.
A couple of tens of people.
I don't want to, you know, to get set any grand, you know, plans out there. But in theory, that's the nicety of Identica. You cannot run your own Twitter server. It's just not possible. It's a lockdown closed system and it's not good. And that's why we've completely and totally, utterly abandoned Twitter. It's of no interest to us at all now.
In the comments, Flibster said, Twitter worked, as in it never did.
Oh, it did. No, it did. When we were on there, almost when SciPodcast started, a couple of months after it, which would have been March 2007. It worked, and we enjoyed it, and we got hooked on it. Then it got popular, and it failed. Identica probably will start to fail. It will get popular, and it will get slow, and it will get sluggish, but hopefully it won't get too sluggish before we set up our own federated server.
But for now, until we do that, and until it stops working, you can find us. You have signed up as SciPodcast. You got there first. You got the name.
I am an early adopter.
You big meanie. So I'm signed up as Christine B. So I think that's it. For this week, we've covered everything that happened.
What a week. Yeah. Formula One needed this week like never before.
I was a bit upset about the back-to-back races because, you know, I'm quite tired.
Yes.
But...
A little bit intense.
Yeah, but I really think it's perfect.
Yeah.
Because if that controversy had gone on for 2 weeks, I'm not sure we would have recovered from it, really.
No.
I think it would have ruined the season. Yeah. and this has made it.
This made the difference. It really did bring the racing back into the spotlight. It brought the drivers back into the spotlight. It really showed. I mean, the people out there, they absolutely earned their money in qualifying. Every single one of every driver who got through to Q1 is a star in my eyes after that weekend because those conditions were horrific. And it was just none of them. I mean, no major accidents apart from Fizzy. Every driver did a really good race today and they should all be congratulated. And Formula One is a big winner after this weekend.